Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Roped In. I'm your host, John Roper. I've got a bit of a kind of fun educational episode on our hands today. I'm going to be talking about the enhanced games. If you don't know what that is, well, then stay tuned. You're going to find out, so you have to listen. I'm also going to be talking about the WNBA mock draft, which is happening next month. And finally, continuing along my obscure sports kind of segments, today we're going to be talking about, it's not a sport that is obscure, but it's a obscure race within the sport. It's running, but this one in particular are the Barkley Marathons. So there you have it. Again, enhanced games, WNBA mock draft, specifically the first round. I'll give you a disclaimer there. And finally, the obscure sport, Barkley Marathons. Sit back, relax, and let's get right into it. So kicking off today's episode is the segment on the enhanced games, which is founded by Dr. Aaron D'Souza, and his co-founder is Christian Angermeyer. I might have pronounced all of that wrong. But yes, it's the enhanced games, which basically is a game that allows steroids. It allows those performance-enhancing drugs. It's kind of every athlete's, I don't want to say every athlete's dream, but every athlete does think about it, you know, what can happen if you did allow these drugs that aren't allowed that people get banned for. So for those that don't know, steroids aren't allowed. Performance-enhancing drugs. You know, there are some drugs that are out there that you can use. There are some that you can't because it gives you an unfair advantage over the rest of the competition. And again, we all want to see fair competition because that's really what's going to determine who's the best in that particular event. So these enhanced games are allowing steroids. One of the things that my sister made a good line of, oh, so now it's going to find out whose medical team and whose doctor is actually the best. So that's going to be something that's going to be interesting to think about with the enhanced games. But it's also nice to see of, you know, where can we test this human potential? And exactly how far can we push the human body is kind of where I think these enhanced games are going, in a safe way, of course. So I'm going to say my initial thought on this was I was very skeptical. You can ask my friends that I was talking to. I really bashed on it. I bashed on it too hard. They did open my eyes to certain things that I was potentially wrong about. But my initial thought right away is you allow a game that allows steroids. It's basically going to promote the use of steroids. So yes, steroids one is banned because it promotes unfairness, but I also think it's banned because it promotes an unhealthy lifestyle that obviously leagues and events don't want to happen, where this game does. So yes, the professional athletes will know how to use it. I think it's the 14 to 18 year olds that want to make it into the league but know they have to use steroids to get there that might not use it correctly, that I think it's going to be the detriment that this might come up. So those are my initial skepticisms. However, yes, they were completely right. I think it's going to be absolutely amazing if used correctly to see what can happen. I mean, we all know the steroids era is what saved baseball. I think steroids in sports could be really interesting to look at and interesting to watch. So after kind of looking a bit on their website and seeing what this game is about, you know, I've learned a couple of things and some things I was definitely skeptical about. I think I'm still right to be skeptical about, but they did sway me on a couple of things and make me think like, you know what, maybe there is a version of this that actually could work. So right away, when you look on the website, to me, again, because I'm looking at it in my initial skepticism mindset, it's a very misleading website. It kind of looks like the anti-propaganda. They're mentioning a lot of things that they're just bashing. One of their first segments is about pay, and right away they're bashing on the Olympics, and they're saying that not every Olympian wins bonus money for getting medals, which, you know, did open my eyes to realize that there's really not a lot of those countries out there that are giving those monetary bonuses to winning medals. I'm happy to say that Canada is one of them. So my sister, who won a gold medal, for those that don't know, shout out Christine Roper. Yeah, either way, it's nice to kind of see the countries honor their athletes that put their blood, sweat, and tears into representing their country on this level and promoting it in that way to an event that really makes a lot of money. The International Olympic Committee does not give money to the athletes, so I think that's a little bit messed up. But one of the things that I find a bit misleading on their website and why I mentioned it is they compare Olympic athlete payouts to Wimbledon payouts. Now, where I find this tricky is, yes, it's on that same level of international competition, but Wimbledon is a one-time competition that has that crazy history. It's got all the funding. There's only one winner. If there was only one winner in the Olympics, that person would win a crap ton of money. But there's so many events that it's hard to have that many people win the same amount of money. Like, you're not going to have that much money put into it. So that's where comparing it to an event like Wimbledon, even if you compare it to the World Cup, like any single event, of course that team or that person is going to make more money than an event that hosts multiple competitions. Like, it's just the way it is. So that's where the website is a bit misleading on the pay side. They also mention they're going to pay fairly, unlike the Olympics, but then they don't mention how they're going to pay fairly. They put a couple of investors on there. I'm sure sponsors are going to be on there. I'm sure they have all intent to pay fairly and make it something you can make a living out of. But how are they going to do it? You know, I'm sure the Olympics thought about those kind of things. Like, I'm all for it, but until you tell me how you're going to do it, to me, it's just words on a website that are going to make people think, oh, these are great games, but what are you actually going to do about it? You know, one of the things that I did see, which I do really like, I'm sure it happens now as well, but they're going to give bonuses for world records at these events. I absolutely love that idea. You know, the Olympics might do that now. Maybe they don't. Maybe countries do that. I don't actually know if that happens or not. I didn't look into that side of it. I know the enhanced game said they would. That much I really do like. It is really nice to see that if you are at the top of your game and really showing out on an event where you're supposed to show out, you get rewarded for doing it. So that's where I like the bonus for the world records. But that's kind of my take on the pay side of things. They break down the cost of these events in their three steps of how they're going to save their money on the event in order to pay their athletes a lot more money. So the first step in their cost saving kind of three-step strategy is limiting it to just core sports. So they're going to take away the team aspects and they're going to take away ball-related sports. So for those of you that are like, oh, we're about to see baseball home runs, not in the enhanced games at least. So they're taking away those aspects and they're making it five core sports: athletics, aquatics, gymnastics, strength, and combat. Now, I like this idea for enhanced games. You know, it's pushing the body to the limit, and these five areas are what really pushes the body to the limit. So again, that's step one, is limiting it to those core sports. Step two is related to step one, and it's reusing infrastructure. So this part I do agree with. The funding for an Olympic Games or some of these international events like the World Cup is just absolutely ridiculous. Like the corruption and the funding that just happened with the Qatar World Cup, the Olympic events that go on. I mean, I remember going to school doing research of seeing how much money gets put in and how these events are just wasted. I mean, the Beijing Olympics was amazing to look at, but I think the crow's nest right now is unused. Like, it's just sitting there abandoned. Like, amazing games, but now what? They wasted, I shouldn't say wasted, but they put all the money into venues that aren't being used anymore, and I don't like that aspect of it. So what this is trying to say is they're going to reuse infrastructure. So they're going to pick places that already have the infrastructure in place, and they're going to reuse cities that have already had games. So yes, it's not going to promote it like the Olympics does around the world, but that's not necessarily what they're trying to do. They're picking the places around the world that can host it to save the money to pay the athletes, and for that reason, I'm all behind it. Places in America like the universities where they already have all the events. Again, it's the five cores, so they don't need these field events. They don't need the stadiums. They just need a track. Like, a track and field event will be able to get you everything you need. Maybe an indoor arena for gymnastics. You know, that's everything you're going to need. Aquatics, you need a swimming pool. But there's a lot of places that have those three core things. So that's where, in its step, I'm understanding and I'm behind their changes in their two beginning core steps on how they're going to save money on costs to pay their athletes. The third step, I don't overly understand. They say they're going to eliminate bribes and that form of funding, where I'm all behind it. I kind of laugh behind that because every major event will do it. Again, it's one of those you say you're going to do it, but you don't necessarily say how. Granted, there is no saying how, it's just saying no. But I'm sure every event, even the Olympics, say they're not saying yes to bribery. So to say that they're eliminating bribery is just a funny thing to throw in there as a step, because I'm sure every committee or every event that's being put on says say no to bribery. That's obviously not a commandment. I'm not religious, but it's up there. Don't be an idiot. Don't do something illegal. Don't take bribes. But yeah, those are the kind of three core steps in their saving cost strategy for the enhanced games. Then you move on to another tab on their site, and it's saying how, you know, the science is real. So they're talking about how steroid usage has always been around. So they start with saying that, you know, West Africans use some stuff for running competitions. I believe they were talking about some of the indigenous people using some stuff for a stimulant. A couple of things going on here and there. Then they started talking about, I think, the ancient Greeks using stuff for performance enhancing and gladiators and those kind of things. Now, whereas I'm not doubting it, one of the things that I kind of put behind, and yes, my knowledge is not overly strong on these, I'm sure the certain things that they were using were, in a way, natural. So spices that, yes, they had to smoke or maybe ground up or those kind of things, but it wasn't concocting some kind of a liquid in a lab and injecting it into your butt. So yes, I'm a very stereotypical mindset on steroids. I know there's the good side of steroids, and I am eventually going to get into that. But I think where they initially put on here are, yes, the absolute good uses of the good things of steroids. You know, they kind of go on to mention things about the Vikings, those kind of things. But it's where I stand on most kind of drugs, is where it turns to you're building it in a lab and you're fine-tuning it for a certain reason. If it's something natural that most people can get access to, I get it. But again, when you're fine-tuning a thing, as my sister said, it then becomes, who's the best medical team? Who's the best doctor? Who can build the best superhuman, basically? And yes, I'm all excited to see who can build the best superhuman, but it does take a bit out of the, I don't want to say that. It's not that it's the same, but it's like Formula One in Red Bull right now. They're absolutely dominating because they have the best engineering team. Not to say Max Verstappen isn't a fantastic racer. Yes, he would probably be winning in a lot of other cars as well. It's a perfect pairing right now. But, you know, the engineers do a lot. Let's just say I don't think Sergio Perez would have finished two races in a row if he wasn't sitting in that Red Bull car. So there are things to say that it then becomes things more about the research and the science behind it, as opposed to the actual athlete and the natural things going on. But then again, I can't necessarily be the one to make that fine line and separation. So who am I to really say anything? Maybe there is people out there that don't really think there's any real difference to something that's absolutely natural and something that's made in a lab. As long as they're both performance-enhancing drugs and used in a certain way. But I personally do. But again, on this tab, they have more misleading information. So where I'm going to talk about, they have certain things where they're talking about myths and the truths behind the myths. So I'm not going to necessarily say yes or no. I didn't do my full-on research behind it. I'm not a doctor. I was supposed to say scientist. I am not a doctor. But I think it's somewhat misleading the way they put it. So one of the myths is steroids cause tumors. And then their truth is, according to Dr. Norman Faust, who was a university at the Wisconsin School of Medicine, said, what's missing is a single artifact of evidence or even a quote from any authority on the topic to support any connection between steroids and Elzado's tumor. Now, that's a great, strong quote, saying, you know, there's no authority that's saying there's any connection between the two. However, to me, again, in my skeptical mindset, reads that as there's one doctor at one school that's saying there's no connection with one person's case. That does not say that steroids don't cause tumor. That just says potentially in this one case, there's one doctor in America that thought there might not be a connection. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying there is, but I'm just trying to say with my, again, skeptical mindset where I think this is a misleading website. Another thing they go on to say are steroids are bad for your health is a myth. And then their truth is it actually has positive effects on health of athletes, particularly in relation to muscle mass, strength, and endurance. It reduces the risk of injury and fatigue, thus leading to improved performance. No shit. That's what we all knew steroids did. None of us are saying that steroids aren't bad for your muscles. They're not bad for your strength. They're not bad for your endurance. What some of us are saying are steroids are bad for the heart. Steroids are bad for everything else that causes you to live. All the other organs that are going on inside of your body. So, yes, of course it has the improved performance on the athletic field. That's what you do steroids for. It's the health off the field that we're talking about. Either way, I do think that there is science behind the steroids. There is good use. There are the other steroids out there that I think are banned that shouldn't be banned. Now, I'm not a doctor. I don't have a crazy long list. I don't know all the crazy long science terms. But I do know that I think a couple of them are banned that should not be banned. There are the recovery ones. There are the, you know, certain things like even protein powder. That is somewhat built in a lab. I shouldn't say somewhat. That is built in a lab. And that is something that I am behind and I don't think shouldn't be banned. So there are some performance enhancing things that I do understand are out there, and who am I of where to draw the limit? It's to me the stereotypical sticking the needle in the butt stuff that I'm not a fan of behind the science of steroids and those kind of things, where I don't think this website fully explains what they're getting behind with the enhanced games. But again, it is in its early days, so they're probably getting to that. They're consulting, they're growing their team, they're getting more information, so I'm sure that will come out. But that's kind of where I go with it. The final thing where I'm going to mention kind of on all of this, where I'm major pro on the side of where if they do find a way to make this work, I'm a huge fan of it. They're going to be doing health tests instead of drug tests. So yes, you might think that's crazy to all those athletes, to all those purists that like the game. You're going to think this is just stupid. I like the idea. You know, again, I like the steroid era of MLB. I liked what it brought. So it's going to be really interesting to see what it can bring. And what they're going to do are, again, the health tests instead of the drug tests. So they're going to be testing a lot of things on the cardiac side of things. They're going to be testing your heart, the veins, the blood flow, the blood count. They're going to be testing the liver, the kidney, all these other different things, making sure your body is still running at a mental, I mean, at a good level. Why I mentioned the mental side is they're also going to be doing the brain health. They're going to be testing everything to make sure, yes, you're doing these performance enhancements, but are you doing it at a level that is safe to cause you to still function as a human being in a safe way athletically? And I'm fully behind that. So if you're going to allow it, those are the limitations I'm behind. Again, if you're going to allow these things, allow it in a safe way, and I'm all behind it. I am all for the separation. Yes, I still want to see my purists. I'm behind the idea of this isn't necessarily pushing the limits of the human body. This is pushing the limits of the human body with aid. But I also like seeing pushing the human body with aid, and I can see the argument of it's still pushing the human body. You're not adding anything to it. Again, what's the difference of this and protein powder? So I see those kind of things there, and I'm all behind it. So if it can be done in a correct way, I'm all for it. But there's just a couple of things on the website with my skeptical mindset already that just thinks this isn't going to work out, and it's going to cause a lot more harm and bad than good, and it's kind of going to fail. It's going to be one of those, maybe not fail, but it's going to be one of those XFL situations of the NFL where it's more for show than it is for actual competition. But at the end of the day, if it happens, I'm going to be excited to see the results, because obviously the records will be smashed in a way, and there has to be a different level of world record. There's an enhanced world record and then a regular world record. But either way, it's something that's exciting to look forward to. Those are the enhanced games. If Dr. Aaron D'Souza and his co-founder Christian Angermeyer find a way to figure it out. I'm all for these health tests. I'm all for the enhanced games. Who's to know what the future's going to bring? And moving on, we've got a bit of WNBA action. So again, I'm going to be talking about the mock draft and specifically the first round. I am not going to talk like I am a WNBA expert. Yes, I am pro WNBA. I like watching the women's game. I will admit I like watching the men's game more, but this is not a debate between which one is more exciting. I'm just saying the WNBA game is exciting. I do enjoy watching it. And the draft is coming up on April 15th. So I'm going to be talking again about the first round. It's going on in Brooklyn, and it's the first time that fans are allowed since 2016. So kind of leading up, the lottery pick of the WNBA is the bottom four teams, and this year it was kind of in order of worst to best, Indiana, Phoenix, LA, and Seattle. So that's kind of what's going on there. News about the WNBA draft compared to the NBA draft, for those that know. There's three rounds, unlike the two in the WNBA. And going into this one, the LA Sparks, the Dallas Wings, and the Chicago Sky all had two picks, while the Seattle Storm and the Vegas Aces had no picks each. Neither team had a pick there. So those were all the new things, or I shouldn't say new things, but the kind of additions or things you should know about going into the draft. All the kind of rules, stipulations, regulations. The LA Sparks had two picks in the top five. They picked second and fourth. So it's going to be really interesting to see how their rebuild goes. They've got a really good wing player in Chiney. I'm not going to even know how to pronounce her name, so I'm not going to try and pronounce it. But I think she's a really good player, so it's going to be interesting to see who they pair with her. But the Indiana Fever have the number one pick. That one's also going to be an interesting one to see. They've got Aaliyah Boston out of South Carolina. She's a really good player that they picked recently. That's going to be interesting to see how that one pans out. Chicago Sky are the one that actually have Phoenix's pick. Again, I said Phoenix was in the lottery, but the Chicago Sky have their pick and they're picking third. So that's going to be a fun one to see what they do in the top three. You know, the top five, I think, are pretty set. But it could happen anywhere. I think one and two for sure isn't going to be a surprise when I get to it. But the rest of it could be a bit of a shocker, could be a bit of a surprise. Dallas Wings are the ones that hold that final top five pick. And then finally, Atlanta Dream are rounding it out with the 12th pick. So let's just get right into it. Again, Indiana Fever have the number one pick. It's no surprise. Ladies and gentlemen, they're taking Caitlin Clark. Buy your jersey now. I'm pretty sure Indiana already has everything made to roll out the second it happens. There's not going to be any surprise here. Caitlin Clark is a 6-foot point guard out of Iowa. She is taking over the sporting world. She is blowing up women's basketball. It is impressive to watch. She is the undisputed NCAA scoring champ on the men's and women's side. She just broke Pistol Pete Maravich's record. It's no surprise. She's super exciting to watch. This past All-Star break, we saw Steph Curry and Sabrina Ionescu shootout. I think what would be really cool to watch is if Caitlin Clark and Dame Lillard join the show next year. She's that good of a shooter. It's going to be really, really exciting to see. So that's the undisputed number one pick. She was, without a doubt, the number one pick going into the year, and she has held that number one pick status. Before I get into the rest of the picks, one of the things I forgot to mention that I'll mention now and it kind of leads into it is Paige Bueckers out of UConn. She announced that she's returning back to UConn. That's one of the things that I think I do like and is nice to see with the women's game is the players stick around the college game a little bit longer than the men's side do. Men's side have a lot of one and dones. The females seem to stay there for 3 up to 5 years, and I really like that aspect. It gives them a chance to, you know, develop a dynasty, develop a team, you know, bring your team to a couple of championships, get some records under your belt, put together a career before the league starts. Then again, if you're good enough, you're good enough. So I see both sides of it. But again, Paige Bookers is not coming back. Part of me thinks she did not come back because of everything I just said about Caitlin Clark. She was undisputed number one, whereas next year Paige Bookers could be number one. So yeah, either way, that's my little segue side piece. Now we're getting back to the mock draft, where I don't think anybody's going to be surprised with who I think is the number two pick, and it's Cameron Brink. So Cameron Brink is a 6'4" power forward out of Stanford, and I think she's going to go to the LA Sparks. This year, she's averaging 25 points, 17 boards, and 5 blocks a game. She is undoubtedly the best big man in all of American college basketball for the women's side of things. LA already have that wing player, like I said, in Chinee. I think they go big here with Cameron Brink. I don't think it's any question here. I think everybody else has these 1-2, Caitlin Clark and Cameron Brink. Now, where I have number 3 is where I think Chicago Sky, who again got this pick from Phoenix Mercury, are going to go with Camila Cardoso, the big girl. 6'7", the center out of South Carolina. She's my height. That is absolutely intimidating as a woman. She is averaging 20 points, 4 points, and 14 rebounds and 4 blocks a game. She is, if it wasn't for Cameron Brink, Camila Cardoso would be the undisputed best big man in women's basketball. But again, it's Cameron Brink. So this is where I think Chicago Sky go with Camila Cardoso. Just lock it down in the middle, get your big man. LA Sparks now hold the 4th pick. They get this one from Seattle, who I also mentioned was in the lottery. Just like Phoenix lost their pick, Seattle loses theirs to the LA Sparks, who now pick for the 2nd time. I think they go with Aaliyah Edwards. I could potentially see Aaliyah Edwards going earlier, in which case maybe LA takes Camila Cardoso here. I don't think Cardoso falls below 4. But again, this is where I think Aaliyah Edwards is going to go. Aaliyah Edwards is a 6'3" power forward out of UConn. She's averaging 21 points and 11 boards, which you might not think is anything crazy compared to the other two. She's only got 1 block, but she's got 2 steals per game, which is pretty dominant as a forward. She's a really good defensive unit there, can score, a pretty good kind of both way player. This is where I think her paired up with Chinee and Cameron Brink could be a nice little big 3 going forward. 2 good people on the wing and a big girl down low. That's going to be a really good one to watch there. And Dallas Wings, complement of the Chicago Sky, round out the 5th or top 5. And this is where I think they go with Rekaya Jackson out of Tennessee, the 6'2" small forward. Now, she's averaging 22 and 10. I think she's a big force behind what Tennessee is doing this year. She's a really good offensive piece. And, you know, Dallas, I don't see them passing up. I think she is, without a doubt, the 5th best player, and Dallas just goes for it because she's the 5th best player. Yes, I think if any of those other 4 people fall, without a doubt, Dallas is taking them. But this is where you take Rekaya Jackson. Then we're moving on to the Washington Mystics, who just recently got the news that Della Don is not returning. She didn't necessarily say she's retiring, but she did say she's not returning the team for the definite future. But this is where I think they take the best playmaking point guard in the draft. They take Georgia Amore out of Virginia Tech, the 5'6" point guard. She's averaging 20 points and 7 assists. So she can get it done. She's a really good offensive piece. She can drive a good team. This is, again, I think Georgia Amore is without a doubt number 6 to Washington Mystics. Number 7 is Minnesota Lynx. Now, Minnesota Lynx, I don't really think have many holes on their roster. So this is where I actually see them taking the 6'3" small forward out of Australia, and I might be pronouncing this completely wrong, Nyadu Puak. Again, she is 19 years old, and she has crazy potential. And because this team has absolutely no hole on their roster, that's where I think they just take the person with the best potential, young 19-year-old out of Australia. Australia, by the way, is producing some really good basketball players, and they've got a really good league down there. But Nyadu Puak, I hope I'm pronouncing that wrong. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. She goes number 7 to Minnesota. Number 8 is where I've got Haley Van Lith. Now, this is going to be a shocker to a lot of you. I think a lot of you thought her LSU teammate Angel Reese would probably go before. But I've got Haley Van Lith, the 5'7 point guard out of LSU, going to Chicago Sky. This is that second pick for Chicago Sky. This is where I think she's going to go. Because they took Camila Cardoso, the big girl, out of South Carolina, I don't think they doubled down with Angel Reese. I mean, if they do, I'm all for it. And Angel Reese and Camila Cardoso could be a really dominant big men pairing or big women pairing for the future. It could be really, really exciting to watch. But I just think they go Haley Van Lith, spread it out, get the guard, get the big, get two people that can complement each other pretty well. And that's where I got them taking Haley Van Lith. Number 9 is now where I got Angel Reese going. So this is where Dallas took Rokea Jackson off the wing earlier, and now I got them getting their big woman, Angel Reese. You like her, you don't like her. She's definitely a first-round pick, and I've got her going number 9 to the Dallas Wings, that 6'3" power forward out of LSU. I don't think everything you can fault is necessarily against her. I do think she's one of the best people on our team. But again, Angel Reese is a top 10 pick. And rounding out the final 10, I've got a girl who I really like watching. I think I just like her character. I love Samoans. It's Alyssa Pilley, the 6'2" power forward out of Utah. I've got her going to the Connecticut Sun to partner with my future bride, Rebecca Allen. She's a really good power forward, really good big woman. I've been mentioning that throughout. There's a theme there. I think the bigs are dominant in this draft coming forward, and the Connecticut Sun get theirs in Alyssa Pilley. Then we're kind of moving on to New York Liberty, who they've already got a really good team. They were just in the WNBA Finals. I don't think they need much. They go out and get a really good scorer out of UCLA, Charisma Osborne. She's the 5'9" shooting guard, and she's definitely coming off the bench. All these other names that I mentioned, maybe except for Nyadi Puak, are going to contribute right away. But again, Charisma Osborne joins the New York Liberty, who already have a really good team in Sabrina Ionescu, Brianna Stewart. I know they've got another big woman who I'm going to mess up her name, so I'm not even going to try and pronounce it, but she's very, very good. They've got a really good wing out there, good point guard. So Charisma Osborne joins a really good team. Congratulations to you. And rounding out the number 12 pick, so the final pick of this first round, I think it's going to be Elizabeth Kitely, the 6'6" center out of Virginia Tech. That's two people from Virginia Tech going in the top of the pick. She, I actually think, could play, because instead of it going to the Vegas Aces, who just won, it's actually going to the Atlanta Dream. So Elizabeth Kitely, again, the 6'6" center out of Virginia Tech, is going to be the 12th pick. Mark my words, sign it out. That's going to be 1 through 12, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I don't think it's any surprise. Caitlin Clark's number 1, Cameron Brink's number 2. Again, now where I've got the one shocking, Camila Cardoso, Aaliyah Edwards, and Rokea Jackson in that order are going to be the top 5. And I've got Angel Reese falling all the way to number 9. There you have it, folks. Either way, I think it's going to be a really exciting one to watch. So let's sit back and enjoy that April 15 WNBA draft. And to end today's episode, we're talking about an obscure event in a normal sport, but it's part of my obscure sports segment. It's the Barkley Marathons. Now, I had a lot of fun researching the Barkley Marathons. So for those that don't know, it does have a Netflix documentary, so there are probably some of you listening that when I talk about this, it's going to ring a lot of bells and you're going to remember it. It's a really fun, exciting one, so go out there and watch it. I can't remember what it's named, but you can Google the Barkley Marathons documentary and you're going to see it there. But I'll explain it all here. So it's an ultra marathon that takes place in the Frozen Head State Park of Morgan County, Tennessee. It originally started in 1986 and has taken place every year since in around March, kind of March or April every year. The course always changes. It's 20 plus miles per lap, and it's five laps. You know what? Let me not get into all the currently. But yes, the chorus is always changing, and you're going to say that, dang, John, you didn't do your research. How do you not know if it takes place in March or April? How do you not know where the chorus is? How do you not know how long the chorus laps are? Ladies and gentlemen, when I explain the founder of this event, it's all going to make sense as to, I'm speaking the facts. It literally happens around March and April every year, and it's approximately 20 plus mile laps. So the founder is a fellow named Gary Cantrell, who's also known as Lazarus Lake. In 1979, he was going to school at Middle Tennessee State, and he wanted to join the ultra marathon. So he put on a couple of events to try and train for this ultra marathon. And he kind of found out throughout these events and throughout the years that, you know, he's a pretty good race director. He put on a couple of different events. And in the 80s, him and a friend named Carl Hamm, who's also known as Raw Dog, I'm not kidding, they became intrigued with a park in Tennessee called Frozen Head State Park. So for those that don't know, Frozen Head State Park is the infamous park that James Earl Ray was caught in. James Earl Ray was the assassin of Martin Luther the King Jr. He was locked up in a nearby prison called Brushy Mountain State Prison. And again, he escaped in 1977. He was running around for a long time, and eventually, 55 hours after his escape, was caught having ran 12 miles, again, in 55 hours. He was caught. Again, Gary Cantrell and his friend Carl Hamm got note of this story. They were intrigued with this park, and he mocked, you know what? I could have run 100 miles in 55 hours. So in 1986, he runs it for the first time. So in 1986, now I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but this is a 100 mile, lap. So again, what the Barkley Marathon is currently today is a 20 mile plus laps. You do 5 laps, you alternate the directions, you have 60 hours to do it. So again, you're doing 100 miles in 60 hours. In 1986, they only did around 50 to 55 miles. Again, the course always changed. The event was named after, and where I didn't see in the research, but I could only assume, he initially ran it with his neighbor and running partner, a fellow named Barry Barkley, who unfortunately did pass away in 2019. So again, in 1986, it was around the 50 to 55 miles, not the 100 miles he joked that he said he could run. In 1989 is when it upped to 100 miles because he's like, dang, we can do 100 miles. So 1989 is realistically when this 100-mile race started. So I know right now, I'm sure it's increased throughout the years. I'm sure it wasn't this many back in the day. But right now, the entry to this event, there are 35 runners competing every year. There's a cap of 35 runners. How you get in? You have to write an essay on why you believe you deserve to run the Barkley Marathons. I'm not kidding. You actually have to write an essay. The entry fee is a whopping $1.60. I know, penny breaker on that one. It's $1.60 there. However, this is where I think it's really fun and really quirky and really cool in its way. Another one of the entry fees and prices is if you are new to the event, you have to bring a license plate of your state and or country. I shouldn't say and or country, of your state or country. Of course, they don't have country plates in America. They only have states. In Canada, they have provinces, so you'd bring your province. Basically, where you're from, you bring a license plate of your country, area, place of living. I think that's really cool. So he's gathered a crazy collection of license plates throughout the years. If you are a returning racer, it's the same, writing an essay and $1.60. However, if you did not finish, what you have to bring is an item. Now, he changes his item every year. So if he's like, you know what, I'm running low on shirts, he's going to ask everybody to bring a flannel shirt. Now, it's not a ridiculous amount. Again, of the 35, there's going to be new racers. So he's not getting 35 flannel shirts, but he's getting a lot. And those he doesn't like, he can give away. Those he does, he keeps. But he does shirts, shorts. He does anything. You know, whatever he wants, whatever these small little knickknacks around the house, he's going to get you to bring it for him. If you are a finisher, though, congratulations on you. What you have to do is bring a pack of Camel cigarettes.
along with your $1.60 and your essay. Those are all the entry requirements to this Barkley Marathons. I think it's absolutely amazing. Gary Cantrell is a legend for it. How this event works is basically it starts anytime from midnight to noon. He blows a conch shell 1 hour before the beginning of the race. Now, this I don't overly know the full timing on, but there's one major map that they all get a chance to look at before the race. They all get their chance to make notes. Again, you hear this conch shell 1 hour before the race. You get to take all your notes. You get to take all your prep. You're doing what you have to do. The race starts when Gary Cantrell lights his cigarette. That is absolutely badass. So that's how all of this goes down. And then when it goes, you can't bring a map with you. You're just using the notes and everything you have on your way. I'm sure you can draw a little map if you want, but you're not using the major map that he has. You're just using the notes that you got from the research on there. So not only do you have to be a runner, you also know how to have to read a map. Again, how this race works is once it starts, he's not going to be out there. There's not a course. There's not like a set path along the way where you're running through. It's just kind of figuring it out, following this path. Again, it is five laps. Each lap is 20 plus miles. That's why the distance always varies. That's why it was 50 to 55 miles. That's why it's anywhere from 100 to 110 miles. Like, it always varies. But it's definitely at least 20 miles because you have to do five laps, and they're definitely making sure you're doing 100 miles. They're also, because it's not marked, they're not having people out there. Every single event racer has an odd number. The reason every single racer has an odd number is because the way he knows how you're doing it, he's placed books along the way. Now, you have to rip out a page of said book to prove you've reached there. Now, if you're trying to be sneaky on this, he has duplicate copies. He does not tell you what books are going out there. He will never tell you what books are going out there. You cannot cheat on this. You do not know what your number will be. You have to go out there, bring the page. He matches the page you bring to the page he has. And if it's correct, he knows you've done it all. He knows you've done its range anywhere from 9 being the lowest and 14 being the highest. I also think that's just a really good way of gauging, are you running it? So, in the history since 1989, they've been over 1,000 runners that have started this event. There have only been 21 finishes. The first finish being in 1995, being done by Mark Williams. He finished with a time of 59 hours, 28 minutes, and 48 seconds. The first person to run 100 miles in 60 hours, or in this case, 59 and a half hours, for the Barkley Marathons. I'm sure he's not the first person in the world, but he's the first person at the Barkley Marathons to do it. So shout out to you, Mark Williams, in 1995. But again, there have been 21 finishes, 17 finishers. Yep, 21 finishes and 17 finishers, which means two people have done it twice and one person has actually done it three flipping times. Jared Campbell is the fellow who's done it three times. Brett Mann has done it twice. And just recently, John Kelly completed it in 2023 after having done it pre-COVID. So he's the recent double finisher. The actual record was done in 2012 by, again, another repeat finisher. It was done by Brett Mann. He has smashed this record and owns it by over 3 minutes. It's done in 52 hours, 3 minutes and 8 seconds. Absolutely incredible. So again, how this race works is he lights the cigarette and you go, it's basically run. You do what you have. You have the time. You've got 60 hours to get this race done. You've got five laps to do it. So you've got, again, you go in one direction. When you finish that, you refuel. I'm sure you're going to want to finish. It's 20 miles per race, 30 something kilometers per lap. So I'm sure you refuel and then you head off in the opposite direction and you do basically the same thing with different books. Each lap has different books. So it's absolutely fun and impressive to watch. I was chatting with my sister before recording this and she was saying, you know, as an Olympian, even I think people that train for ultra marathon are a different kind of crazy. So that's where you got to give it to these athletes of you have Olympians that are out here saying that what these people are doing is absolutely impressive and absolutely crazy. So Brett Mon doing this in 52 hours. Shout out to you. But mainly, shout out to Lazarus Lake, man. Shout out to Gary Cantrell, an absolute legend in everything that I've researched and everything that he's done for making the Barkley Marathons. I can't say I follow it every year, and I'm excited to see who wins next year, but boy, was I excited in everything that I read and every bit of research that I did on this. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much, Gary Cantrell, for creating the Barkley Marathons. And thank you for making it to this part of Roped In. Again, I'm your host. Thank you for listening to this episode. It was really fun researching this one. I had an absolute blast on absolutely all segments. Sometimes I say it, sometimes I'm lying, but I'm not kidding on this one. I had my doubts about the enhanced games, and things that I researched changed my minds on the enhanced games. I learned a lot more about the WNCAA or NCAAW basketball players and where I think they're going to go. And again, as I said, Gary Cantrell is a legend. I love learning about the Barkley Marathons. I hope you enjoyed listening to all segments. Thank you very much for listening. If you're a repeat listener, thank you for coming out. If you're a first-time listener, I hope I've got you entertained to come out for the next one. As always, Hakuna Matata.